This is Doc Mike, host of Right on the Left Coast podcast. This is a podcast about homestead living at the Ravenwood Homestead here in Oregon. We share our experiences and discuss topics that may affect living the homestead lifestyle. Hey, this is Doc Mike here on Right on the Left Coast Radio. Thanks for joining me here on Real Liberty Media. We're going to get this show started, man. What a week it has been. I'm telling you, it's been crazy. Oh, yeah. Better put the camera on, huh? Let's see. We got microphone? Yep, we do. We're good. All right. Remember, every Sunday, Hal Anthony does a two-hour show behind the woodshed with Hal Anthony. That dude packs some information in 2 hours solid. And he never takes a break, man. Just 2 hours of solid information. I absolutely love listening to Hal Anthony, and I encourage you to do the same. He has a bunch of great information. Let me see what I want to start with today. I know I have a bunch of stuff. I got to get my notes up. You know, one of those things. Let's get it going here. Oh, I don't need that anymore. Here we go. All right. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I just love doing this. I'm having a great time doing it. I miss it when I don't do it. I didn't get to do it on Wednesday, and you'll find out why in a minute. Although, if you listen to last week's show, you have a pretty good idea why. If you are on any social media sites, please post that we are live and that people can find us in the chat room over on Real Liberty Media. I'm not running a live video today. I'll tell you why. It's so stupid. This is the stupidest thing. So to set up a live video, you have to put up a 1 minute and 20 second holding video. And I have one, but I forgot which one I used, and I didn't probably mark it correctly. So I'm going to set one up that's going to be a default, you know, video. And then I'll do that regularly. If it continues to be okay. It's like just okay right now. I'd like to make it better. I just don't think I have the bandwidth to do it, but we'll see. You know, it's fun to do it. I just love doing this stuff. I just love doing it no matter what. If we can't do it, we won't do it. If it's irritating, we won't do it. But if we, oh, hey, I'll tell you this. If you hear Pebbles meowing, she has become an outdoor cat, which I never really wanted her. She's not really an outdoor cat, but she likes to go out a couple times a day. And I don't like her out for long periods of time. So when she comes in, I lock her in or shut her in. And so I've just done that. So she's going to be whining, wanting to get out. And we're not going to let her. We're just going to let her whine. And she might even get right. Oh, yeah, she came right up here. Come on, get in front of the camera. I dare you. Oh, her tail just passed right in front of my face. That'll be fun on video. Okay, I wanted to. I want to cover a couple things that's old news, but it's kind of important news, I think. One is the guinea fowl. Hang on, let me get a drink. So, as you know, if you've listened for a few weeks, you know, we got the first batch of guinea fowl and only one out of 14 survived. And it's kind of funny. I had family members like talking to me about, yeah, I couldn't believe you told everybody that, you know, 13 of those birds died. And I took some responsibility for it. And I told them, I was like, listen, you know, stuff happens on the homestead. Sometimes, you know, you don't get things right. Sometimes things just aren't right and, you know, things go south. And sometimes when you're talking about very fragile, little tiny baby animals, they go south fast and you can't recover. And last week, I updated that report with the second batch. Wait, I should be live. Yeah, I should be live. Let me see. Is there something wrong? It's 5 after. Am I not live on the feed? So it says I'm connected. Let me just double check here. That is stopped. Yeah, everything's fine. I don't know. Here, let me check it, although I think this is going to be really weird if I check it. It's going to be give me some crappy feedback. Just hang on. Just stick with me here for a minute. Sounds like you're live. Okay, I'm live. Okay, good. I'm not going to go check it. Yeah, probably I'm live. I'm guessing I'm live, so if you... if you're not hearing me... This is so stupid. If you're not hearing me, reset your stuff. Oh my God. Let me just put a message up here. Okay. Okay, sorry I had to type there for a minute. All right. Okay, so the other batch of guineas last week I gave an update about, and that update was that all 14 of them have lived through the first week. Okay, so here we are at the end of the second week. Every single one of them are alive and well. So what's weird about that is both sets of guinea fowl chicks were sent roughly the same age. That's weird. So you heard the music, but the show didn't start until 5 after. That's weird because I started it pretty much within 30 seconds. It doesn't matter. Let's just go on because we haven't even covered the important stuff yet. This is just the intro stuff. But anyway, so the first set of guineas were sent the day they hatched. The second set of guineas were sent as day-old chicks. So, I don't know if that was the big difference or not, but, I mean, I have 15 live guineas now, one from the first batch and 14 from the second batch. All 14 of the second batch, alive and well. Knock on wood. Oh, that was glass. But it's fine. And, you know, yeah, it's embarrassing to admit that you were in the care of 14 animals and you virtually killed 13 of them. But I don't know if it was me or if it was the circumstances. I don't know what happened to them between the time they shipped and the time they arrived. I mean, did they sit in a garage somewhere with a... with the engine running, or, you know, sit in the cold because guineas like it really hot, 95 degrees when they're chicks. But anyway, so that part is fine. Okay, so moving on to the next thing. The next thing was last week, you probably, I mentioned on the show that the septic system quit working. Like we had planned, we'd been babying that thing for a decade plus. And we had planned on having it done this past Thursday, but it failed the Thursday before, so the Thursday before last weekend. And luckily, we got to move the install of the new tank up to Monday of last week. And that's all done now. These guys were so damn efficient. It was crazy. I do have some video I'll probably put up of them breaking up the concrete and digging a hole and... You know, it took some drone footage. I think it's pretty cool. It won't be in this video. It'll be separate. But, you know, and I'll try and shorten it so it's not boring as hell. Well, I mean, it'll be boring no matter what. I guess, I don't know, Sammy, the grandson here, the 7-year-old, he thinks it's cool, you know, all these big machines and digging holes and moving earth and, you know, lifting concrete septic tanks off of trucks with a crane and putting it in the ground. Yeah, he thinks all that's pretty cool. So I know there's people out there who think stuff like this is pretty cool. I did too. I'll tell you, one of the things that I most enjoy in life is watching anybody who is really good at what they do. And I mean, I don't care what the job is. But if they're good at what they do, I love watching them work, man, because it is like, it's just like a dance, you know, it's like art, you know, it's like playing out art in the real world, like real life art. There were just two guys, one guy running an excavator and the other guy running the shovel. I mean, literally manually with a shovel. And kind of guiding the guy on the excavator. And they didn't even have to talk, man. They just used some hand signals and they knew what each other was talking about. And, you know, they've done so many of these that it was just like so smooth just watching them like go through this process. And, you know, you think like if you did it yourself, it would take so long and you'd have to learn some things on the way, you know, to, you know, you have to learn a lot of stuff about moving earth and getting this hole deep enough and making it level and where the attachments are coming in and going out and hooking stuff. I mean, but these guys have just done so many. It was so fluid just watching them do the work. Oh, and by the way, on to kind of the next topic. So the septic system, we don't have to worry about it for the rest of our lives. That's for damn sure. This job is done perfectly well. It is brand spanking new concrete, double section, you know, whatever, septic tank. It's going to work wonders. It's going to be fantastic. So really happy with that because, oh my God, are we spoiled or what? You know, when you don't have water, no, you have water, but you can't let it go down the drain of your house. You know, which means all the water, like shower water, toilet water, dishwashing water, laundry water, any water, no water going down the drain because it doesn't go down the drain. It stops when it hits, you know, the septic system and it just backs up and you do not want that, you know, flooding your house. So, but yeah, life becomes pretty rough when you lose all those amenities, that's for sure. But I'm glad it's all done. Fantastic. We're moving on. But kind of leading up to the next topic here is, so these guys moved, I don't know how many yards of earth, a ton, like tons of yards of earth. And so we had to find places for it. So they put it here and they put it there and, you know, they put it in their dump truck and they backed up and they dumped some of it in the north pasture, and we dump some to make a slide for when it snows next year or whatever, slope, you know. And then Rochelle was like, oh, I need some of that dirt moved. So I go and get on the John Deere, and I bring it up, and I start to pick up, I think I picked up one load of dirt. No, two. I picked up two loads of dirt, and I was picking up the third load, and all of a sudden, hydraulic fluid just starts spraying everywhere, this real fine mist of hydraulic fluid, and it just happened to be aimed right at Rochelle. Well, not directly at her. It was aimed straight up in the air, but it was coming down on her like a foggy mist, and luckily, it was one of those days when it was kind of like a little bit, it was kind of cloudy with a chance of rain, a little bit cold, coolish. And so she had a hoodie and she just threw her hood up real quick and kind of snuck away until she was out of the line of fire of the hydraulic fluid. So I started looking because I thought, well, maybe it's just a hose. Oh, no, it wasn't a hose. It wasn't even like where the hose screws on to the ram. It was like the fitting on the ram literally broke. So it wasn't like I could fix it, which really sucks because, you know, it's now broken. You can't use it because the bucket won't tilt up and down and it won't stay up. And you're getting sprayed with hydraulic fluid if you do use it. And you're going to lose all your hydraulic fluid and nothing's going to work anyway. Okay. So I didn't try Flex Seal. I should have tried some of that. I'm kidding. It wouldn't work. So that was Monday. And I took Monday off because I didn't have a working septic system and I was in a crappy mood, so to speak. And I wanted to watch what the guys were doing and kind of get an idea what they were going to do and how they were going to do it and all that stuff. So I called John Deere and I was like, hey, you know, I got some pictures here. You know, do you have some place I can send these pictures so you can tell me, do I have to bring the tractor in, or, you know, is this a user serviceable part? Which I have a little bit of a story, a report in a minute about John Deere and letting users service their own equipment. But anyway, I said, excuse me. I said, I know, I'm sure you're busy, because this week we have had this outstanding weather, like sunshine and warm, you know, temperatures in the 70s and 80s, maybe a little breeze, but it's just been a beautiful week. And I figured everybody would have their tractors out doing stuff and they would be braking and people would be taking them in to get them serviced. Well, so John Deere says, oh no, and this was kind of later in the day on Monday, so it was too late for me to take it over there. And they said, yeah, you're going to have to bring that in. You probably, you know, we can fix it, but he said a new ram is going to cost about the same amount of money. I mean a piston, a hydraulic piston that moves the bucket in and out or tilts it up and down. So, hey, and I just got this new trailer. All of these things kind of came together so perfectly. Our son was working, he's been working with this guy for a long time. And that guy had this tandem axle trailer that he wanted to get rid of. He wanted to sell it, and it was on the job site that they were working on, and he didn't even want to haul it home. He's like, yeah, I have a new one. He says, I just want to get rid of this one. So Scott told us, and you know, we offered him what we thought was a fair price for it, and he sold it to us. So I have this big, giant trailer now, tandem axle trailer that'll haul my tractor and cars and whatever else. So so Wednesdays, when I'm normally off, I took my tractor over to John Deere on the new trailer. I had to learn how to, you know, load it up and all that stuff, and that was cool. I mean, it was cool because, you know, I'm not a trailer guy. I mean, I can do it, but it's not like I use one all the time, so you have to be careful and pay attention to what you're doing. And, you know, so I hauled it in there because I was thinking it was going to be weeks before it got fixed. And they said, you know what, actually not a lot of people have called yet, but I'm sure we're going to get busy now that the weather's nice. So I took it in on Wednesday. I got it back today, which is kind of incredible, like 4 days. And this is, so they fixed that, the damage. They did a complete service on it, which means the engine and the hydraulics, which kind of makes sense since I broke a hydraulic piece. I mean, they'd have to pretty much do a hydraulic service anyway, just refilling and topping off the hydraulics and making sure they all fit or work and all that stuff. And yeah, it was kind of expensive, but here's the deal. Like, my wife went in to pay while I was loading it up on the trailer to bring it home. And, she mentioned it being under warranty, and the woman said, yeah, she goes, I think it probably is under warranty. So we'll submit it and see what they say. So that's kind of cool. I might have, you know, the service won't be under warranty, but the repair might be. So that would be cool. You know, maybe I just have to pay for the part, which is $900 or something like that. But, you know, the tractor's sitting right here about 10 feet from me outside my window because I didn't put it away yet. Because, you know, it's springtime. It stays late till about 9 o'clock, and I still could get some work done with it after the show. In fact, I think there was something, one other thing I had to do with it before I put it away. But, yeah, it brings me to this point. So, I don't know, about 10 years ago, well, John Deere started putting, you know, some AI in their tractors. It's not really, I mean, maybe it is AI, but they started putting electronics in their tractors that would allow the tractor, you know, to GPS a field. Like I guess it could be driverless. Like you would just, you know, put the tractor in the starting point, tell it to go harvest the grain, and it will go harvest the grain. And if you've mapped it out, if you have to miss like a tree stump or a ditch or something like that, you map it out and it misses it. Well, the thing is, John Deere didn't want users to go in there and screw with any of the electronics. So they had this kind of clause in their repair or ownership manual that says, you know, this is a non-user serviceable part. And just think about this. And I talked about this on a show, I think, about a year ago, it seems like, about this whole idea of having these automated pieces of machinery out farming your field. I mean, it does kind of make sense, especially in this day and age when you have states like Oregon and Washington and some others who are paying migrant workers overtime and paying them hourly and, you know, making sure they get breaks, which I'm not opposed to any of that. But it's not been the norm for migrant workers or farm workers, I guess I should say. And so, you know, now if they work overtime, it's going to cost the farmers more, whereas you can just put that machine out there and let it do its thing, and it's going to do its thing until it's done doing its thing, and you don't have to pay it overtime or make sure it gets a potty break or, you know, it can only work under 95 degrees or whatever. Oh my God, I sound cynical. And I think I am. I'm kind of, you know, on this borderline right now. Like, some things really irritate the crap out of me. And then other things I'm just like, yeah, whatever. You know, like, whatever. It's beyond my ability or desire to care about some stuff. And the stuff I do care about, I don't know, there's such a war going on to squelch the things that I like. But let me get back to this John Deere thing. I'll finish that and then go on to this other idea. So anyway, finally, after 10 years in a lawsuit, John Deere lost. And farmers are able to repair their equipment. And I think what the deal was is John Deere didn't want farmers to go in there and like hack the software. Now, of course, you all know I'm a big open source guy, so I love Linux. You can literally go in and access all of Linux's code and do whatever you want to with it. It is yours to totally F it up or tweak it so it's better for you. Or, you know, whatever. You're welcome to do whatever you want with the code to Linux. And I kind of have a feeling that John Deere is using some Linux software. I don't know, though. Haven't looked into it that closely. But, and you know what? Here's another idea. You know, you talk about labeling people. You know, and we could easily think, you know, farmers are just dumbasses that are out there working the soil and they're just dumb as hell. But that's not true. I mean, some of those guys, like the rest of the world and any population you want to look at, there's some people that are just freaking geniuses. Or like myself, my profession is dentistry. But really, one of my loves is, you know, writing code or, you know, adjusting software or, just hacking in general or helping people out. Although I really don't like to do that anymore because people get on my nerves. It's so true. But yeah, some of those guys are, you know, pretty good at, you know, manipulating software and hacking software and fixing their equipment. And here's the deal. Like, I was watching this program, gosh darn it, and I can't think of the guy's name right off the bat, but he used to do like this show about vehicles, and he's from the UK, and then he started a farm during COVID, and he was talking, so he was a guy who kind of made a transition from what he was doing to this new life on the farm. And He was talking about harvesting some grain one time, and I can't remember if it was soybeans or wheat or who knows what, oats, barley, who knows. But he said, so they'd have to go out several times a day, and they would check the humidity of the product, and it had been cut and laying in the field, but you couldn't harvest it right away because it had to dry out, but you couldn't let it dry out too much. There was like this sweet spot where when it hit this one percentage of humidity, and I think it was like 11%, bang, you had to freaking harvest it. And that doesn't mean, you know, you stroll on back to the barn and start servicing your equipment and hook up attachments. It means get that damn thing out here and harvest now, because anything could happen. Like if a rain cloud comes through, or, you know, a dry wind blows through or whatever, then the humidity is wrong. And you'll harvest that product thinking that you harvested it in the right humidity. And then you'll take it to the cellar, and they won't give you a top price for it, because there's a motorcycle or something going by, which, you know, I live out the end of the road, so it doesn't happen often. Got distracted. Anyway, you won't get the top price for your grain, which means, you know, when you want the top price, because you put all that hard work into it, and, you know, you want the premium price, because you grew a premium product, and now, you know, it's too dry or too moist or whatever, and the buyers are just going to give you, you know, the second or third tier price for it. So if you have something, let's say you're harvesting and something breaks and you're like, holy hell, there's rain coming tomorrow, I got to get this crop in, you don't have time to call John Deere and say, hey, I got to schedule an appointment for this piece of equipment to get fixed because, you know, I got to harvest this grain. You need to be able to fix that piece of equipment and get going, like now. And I think that's what farmers were arguing. Because now think about this. You're probably not going to get a farmer to buy this piece of equipment if they're not also kind of familiar with, like, operating systems in general. Like, you know what, and that kind of brings me to a good point. Well, I've talked about it before, but, you know, kids today, I mean, they just think the phone does everything, and they don't care about an operating system, honestly, because, like, to me, operating system means, like, Mac OS is Apple, or OS 10, or whatever the hell they use on Apple, or Linux, or Windows, or some other OS. To kids today, they don't know any of that. It's either an Apple, a Samsung, or Windows, you know, Google, Samsung, Apple, LG, you know, whatever. They don't know about operating systems or computer systems or anything like that. But a lot of other people did grow up with computers and grew up kind of wanting to make them work and work for us, not just do stuff for us, but literally make it do what I want it to do instead of whatever it wants to do. And, you know, there's a lot of farmers out there who are like that. And so you're not going to get a farmer to buy a piece of equipment that does, you know, harvest the entire field, you know, driverless. And he's not going to have some idea about, you know, how that whole thing occurs. He's going to want to be able to, like, for example, know how to get on that machine and shut it off if something goes haywire. If you could do that safely, I don't even know. But pretty much you're going to have guys who are like, okay, if I buy this piece of equipment and something stops working, you know, how do I reboot it? How do I access the operating system so I can see what, you know, is there a log report that comes out that'll tell me what the last malfunction was or the last normal function? I mean, there's guys out there who, you know, can and will do that. So John Deere lost that lawsuit finally. It took 10 years, but they finally lost it, and farmers now can repair their own equipment. Now, I'm sure, God, how laws go, there's probably going to be some, I don't know, challenge to it or whatever, but Interesting, though. It was really interesting to me that that just came out that this time, you know, like literally the day I took my tractor in on Wednesday is the day that that news broke. It was kind of funny. Okay, but along the same lines as these lawsuits and some of the topics I'm covering today kind of traverse this span between living on the homestead and events that are happening in the world that can affect what you do on the homestead. And I was thinking, so this past week, Washington State, which is, I'm in Oregon, so Washington State is just north of me here, they passed a law that made all guns illegal. And I know you're thinking to yourself, probably like me, well, they can't do that. Well, they did it. And so everybody quit selling guns instantly. Like everybody who, you know, commercially sells guns quit. Immediately quit selling guns. And I was thinking, well, of course it'll get beat in the Supreme Court. And they know it'll get beat in the Supreme Court. But here's what I think is going on. So everybody knows how much money everybody has these days, right? It's not like you're the NRA and you have some kind of secret stash of money somewhere. It's public information how much money the NRA has or other publicly available organizations that would fight something like, you know, this kind of a law. Well, everybody knows how much money they have. And also that means especially these governments who have been taken over by radical leftists, I think they're just going to keep passing laws and creating lawsuits until they've financially broken these organizations. I think that's what the plan is. I think that's what they're attempting to do because they know that the Supreme Court is not going to support this ban. You know, this assault weapon ban, which means, you know, there's no definition of what an assault weapon is. So basically every single gun has become an assault weapon as far as Washington is concerned. Which means, you know, a lot of previously lawful gun owners are probably, you know, on the borderline of not being lawful anymore. Or it's just a matter of time because, you know, of course they say, they, meaning the government, who passed these laws, and in particular Washington State, who passed this law, you know, say, well, we're not going to come after your guns, you know, if you own a gun, but you can't sell the gun, you can't give the gun away, you can't trade the gun. That gun can no longer, you know, kind of goes back to what I was saying about, you know, owning a piece of equipment. Like, who actually owns the equipment if you can't repair it yourself? And this is not just, you know, and I'm not only talking about the John Deere thing or now this assault gun thing. I'm talking about your cell phones. I mean, Apple had a similar lawsuit about repairing your own phone. You know, they had a thing that said, oh, no, you can't repair your phone yourself. Even though a lot of people could get, you know, a new board or new battery or new whatever and fix a screen and fix the phone themselves, Apple was like, nope. Can't touch this. You know, if you touch it, the deal's off. We'll no longer, you know, I don't know. I don't know what they would do, but it was like a violation of the purchase agreement to fix your own phone. Same with John Deere. You couldn't fix your own tractor. It was a violation of, I don't know, the purchase agreement or whatever. So I don't know what would happen if you did fix your own equipment and violated that term of service, but same thing with this gun, these guns now. So who actually owns the gun? If you can't sell it or give it away or will it to your family, like what happens to that gun? Like it's kind of like somebody else has taken possession of that gun already. Even though you kind of possess it, it's in your presence probably. Somebody else controls it because they're saying what you can and can't do with it. Anyway, so my point is, I think the whole idea here is for some of these states, they're just going to keep wearing down the organizations that fight these things in court. And, you know, yeah, like I'm one of those guys, I think about some of the things I missed in my lifetime that I really thought I wanted to do, I'm not 100% sure about Waco. Like, I really thought Waco was wrong, but I was kind of at a time in my life I couldn't pay close attention to it. But the most recent example I can think of is the Bundy Ranch here in the Northwest or in Nevada, you know, and that whole thing. I really wanted to just stop and go, you know what, I'm just going to go down there and support those guys because this is bullshit that the government is trying to interfere and they're, you know, forcing these guys to do something that's illegal. And there was another one. There was a time I wanted to go down and, you know, enforce the border, help some patriots just like patrol the border. Just because, I mean, the farmers down there and people living down there, some of them fear for their lives. Some of them find bodies on their property regularly. Like every week, there's one or two new bodies that are on their property. People trying to get to the United States who died along the way. And, you know, there's, you know, a lot of crime down there and all that stuff. It's Cliven's 77th birthday today. Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. Yeah, man, but so there's these things that I, you know, like you think, oh, I, you know, if I just would have taken, like said, screw my job and gun and done this thing, maybe I would have felt like I did more at the time to help whatever situation. And like right now I'm thinking to myself, okay, what do I have to do to help this situation? And I know so many people, like I say all the time, you know, if you have some kind of a gun question, don't ask a cop, for God's sakes. Like, ask your own lawyer, or maybe ask the people at the gun shops, you know, federal firearms license holders. If you have a question, ask them. Don't ask cops, because you're exposing yourself to something. No matter what, they're going to have that kind of history about a conversation with you. And there's no sense in talking to cops about it. Like, let's say you find a gun. Like, if I found a gun, let's say I'm going out on my property, I'm doing some border security on my property, and I see a handgun there, I'm not going to immediately call the cops. I'm going to put that gun away, make sure it's safe. I'm going to look it over real good, probably not touch it with my hands, because I don't want to leave fingerprints on it in case it was used in a crime. But I'm probably going to, you know, check that thing out pretty good, start asking around, you know, some of my neighbors that I feel comfortable with aren't going to say anything. Like, I'd be like, hey, did you lose a gun? But I'm not going to call the cops and go, hey, I found a gun up here on my property. You know, there's just some things that you shouldn't do. And I think the less government involvement you have, period, is better. I'm going to get to another story about that too. Actually, let me just do it now. So Joe Rogan did a show. I don't know, why do I have this background on? So stupid. You know what I really wanted? I really wanted the Eagles. No, not Father Arrested. No, not that. No, not that. Here we go. Oh, they're kind of asleep. It's right here. Can you see it? I know. You'll see it when you see the video. It's nighttime. Gosh dang it. Anyway, Joe Rogan did a show recently. And gosh darn, I was going to find it. I'm not going to find it. You know why? Because it's not in my browser. It's on Spotify. He did a show this week. He talked to a guy named James Fox, and it's episode number 1976, the Joe Rogan Experience, episode 1976. This guy did, Joe Rogan did an excellent interview, as he always does, a conversation with James Fox, who has done some documentaries on UFOs. and aliens. And, you know, he told this whole story about alien contact and live aliens being recovered from a crash in, I don't know, Venezuela or Brazil or somewhere in South America. And I was listening to it when I was falling asleep last night, so I'd wake up and catch another part of it, and I didn't hear the whole thing. But the one thing that I did hear is, you know, so they, you know, so the U.S. Air Force shows up in South America, and they secure this perimeter, and then they take over, and everything freaking disappears. And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe one message I want to get out today to everybody who listens and downloads a podcast is, if you see a UFO, if you have a close encounter, if you are abducted by aliens, or you find an alien UFO crash site with alien bodies, any kind of, you know, extraterrestrial exposure, do not contact the government. Do not call the Air Force and ask them, hey, do you have anything on your radar over Sheridan, Oregon? Like, it's 9:37, you know, I'm on Cherry Hill. Did you see anything on your radar? You know, because I saw, you know, this bright flashing light, and then I heard this crashing sound and smoke and flames is coming off of the hill just north of me here in the tree farm. Especially if you verify it yourself, you're up there looking at the parts and there's bodies scattered around and they're not human, they're alien. Yeah, don't call the Air Force. I don't know who you call, but not the Air Force and not the cops. Call Joe Rogan, man. I don't know, man. There's plenty of people to call. Trust me. Call MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, or call George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM, or call Clyde Lewis on Ground Zero. I mean, call anybody but the officials, because they are going to screw things up and lose stuff. And probably on purpose, they're going to lose stuff. So just don't call them. Right? Let's actually start handling this stuff ourselves. I mean, that's kind of what homestead living is about. It really is. It's like, handle stuff yourself. You know, if you can't handle yourself, go get the experts. You know, don't, like the septic system. I'm not going to dig a freaking hole and set a septic tank myself. Although it was pretty cool to see that happen. I'm going to call some experts. We're going to get it done fast and efficient and correctly. And that's exactly what happened. The concrete is almost dry. They took up 4-6 panels of concrete. It's all poured now. Back to the way it was. Brand new septic tank, up to date, modern, done by experts, fast and efficient. It was worth every single penny. Same with gardening, growing your own food. Do it yourself. You have birds, tend to them yourself. You make mistakes like I made. So some part of that had to have been something I did or didn't do. You'll make mistakes, but you got to learn. So you learn by failing sometimes. There's nothing wrong with failing. You know, and if a bird dies, you're not going to call the local freaking government about it, or the extension agency, or the, like we have Oregon State University Extension Service, which means there's some kind of officials attached to an institute of higher learning who's just going to, you know, let's say it's bird flu. They're just going to report it to some other authorities and come and burn all your freaking chickens. Don't do it. Solve problems yourself. And that's what I try and encourage in our grandkids today, is like, you know, solve this problem. You know, whatever it is, attempt yourself to solve this problem. Because someday, all of us standing here are not going to be here to solve the problem for you. You know, someday you're going to have to stand on your own and you're going to have to figure out what's the best solution. And yeah, you're going to make mistakes, but you'll be armed as well as you can be armed to not make big mistakes. You know, maybe make some little mistakes. You know, not fatal mistakes. All right. Let me make sure I have covered the stuff that I thought was, oh my God, are you okay? Oh. You know, the hypocrisy again, it drives me nuts. I just want to go over this one story with you because I have some really good news I want to share with you guys. It's really kind of cool. Yeah, I saw a law here in Oregon or Washington, I can't remember which. You know, there's a big push on to keep our kids safe from fentanyl. And I'm thinking to myself, why? Like you literally want to chop their privates off, gender transition them without parents' permission, but you want to protect them from fentanyl. Why? I don't understand. There was a dad in Arkansas who pierced his son's ear last week. He spent two nights in jail for piercing his son's ear. Like, it would have been better if he cut off his penis or, you know, mutilated his daughter's boobs or whatever. You know, because that's kind of accepted. Oh, gender transition, no problem. But God forbid you should pierce your son's ear. And his son wanted his ear pierced. This is how crazy life is right now. It is the craziest thing. Oh, yeah, and then this really blew me away. I want to show you this headline because this is how crazy it is. I want you to see this. Okay, it says, now this is from thestranger.com. I don't know what that is, but this is a good article. It says, no, Washington did not just pass a law allowing the state to kidnap and transgenderify children. So that's the title. It says, no, and they're talking about Washington State here. Washington State did not just pass a law allowing the state to kidnap and transgenderify children. But let me read, I'm just going to read two paragraphs from this very article. It says, Washington law is clear. Licensed homeless shelters or programs that accept children must inform the parents and hometown police department of the child's mental and physical state, where they are, and how they got there. Okay? Sounds good, right? Except for the next paragraph. They must relay that information within 24 to 72 hours unless there is evidence of abuse, or the child is seeking an abortion, or the child is pursuing gender-affirming care. Isn't that crazy? So Washington State wants you to believe that they can't do this stuff without the parents' permission. And then it says right in here, if the child is seeking abortion or pursuing gender-affirming care, or there is evidence of child abuse, then they don't have to tell anybody. Right? So basically, all somebody has to do, all one of these children has to do, is claim any of those three things. And their parents don't need to be told anything. They could basically, yes, kidnap and disappear your child if they show up in a Washington State shelter. And what's crazy is, Washington and Oregon have nearly doubled the number of abortions since Roe v. Wade was overturned. And, you know, other states have have banned abortions or banned abortions after 6 weeks or et cetera, et cetera. They're all flooding to Oregon and Washington because we welcome them with open arms, because the one thing that these two states could give less of a crap about, it's freaking children. Kill them young, kill them unborn, kill them almost born, kill them shortly after they're born. And if that doesn't work, mutilate the hell out of them, because especially without telling their parents, because that's what's important in this world to these two states and probably California too, is just like, yeah, let's just, you know, the craziest thing is, I talked about women last week and transgender men who pretend to be women to go beat up on women. The craziest thing to me is the left hates human beings, you know, climate change. They hate women because, you know, transgender competition. You have to let that man beat up the women because he claims to be transgender. And babies and children, they could, you know, I mean, there's the first step in cutting back on climate change is just hack them up in the womb, hack them up after the womb, hack them up wherever, whenever, doesn't matter. The left absolutely hates human beings, and yet they have this huge following. You know, and I'm not kidding. I am so grateful to have lived when I have lived, and hopefully it doesn't go as far as I think it's going to go while I'm still alive, but it very well could be. Okay. Oh, West Nile virus. I just wanted to say the largest outbreak of West Nile virus in the United States occurred during May and December of 2021. There's some reason for it. I'm not going to go into it. It's all kind of BS. Okay, next. So on the next show, I'm going to talk about a bunch of stuff. I just want to make sure, gosh dang, there's still some stories I want to cover, but I just don't have time to do them justice right now. Yeah, welcome to the greatest show on earth. What role do you play? Man, isn't that the truth? Thank you, Cowboy Tech. Such a great comment. And that's the truth, man. What role do you play? And, I did a show one time talking about this whole process I went through to figure out where and who I was way back in 2001. And really kind of helped me out in my life. And I hope everybody kind of identifies what, you know, who and what they are and what role they play. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to actively, go get involved in something you don't want to get involved in. But what are you doing today in your life, you know, just to make your life better and maybe somebody around you? I don't know. Not really that important. It's really important you take care of yourself. Oh, I do want to get distracted a little bit. Okay, so on the next show, this is what I hope to cover. There's a few things like, nope, not that. The West Nile virus, I did that. So there's some new diseases they found in a unique place. There's a new mineral they found. They found some hole in the ocean floor off the Oregon coast that's spewing ancient water. And who knows what else is in that. I'm going to cover that. There's a story about living in a city I want to talk about. Actually, this is one of the crazy stories I'll talk about next time is photosynthesis. Because we always, okay, I know, it's interesting. Photosynthesis is the way plants produce oxygen from, guess what, a carbon dioxide, which is considered one of the greenhouse gases of the earth. It's such a harmful gas that we actually use it to make oxygen in the world. But the process by which plants make photosynthesis there's a new step. This photon kind of gets eaten, used up earlier in the process than they thought, and can occur later in the process where they know that it occurs, but there's actually another step that happens. The natural alternatives to ibuprofen I've been still wanting to get to. And, okay, this is what I wanted to finish with. This is kind of great. I made a change in the show about, I don't know, kind of the beginning of this year, I think. And I did it, I think, just for overall, I don't know why I did it. I think I wanted to kind of not be the redneck dentist. I mean, I am the redneck dentist. That's probably all. I've kind of always claimed that title, believe it or not, because I've always kind of been this way. I've always lived kind of, you know, on a property with some, you know, vegetable growing and trying to do my own thing and not have the government get involved in my life or have it involved in my life as little as possible. And, you know, when I became a dentist, I was kind of a redneck in school. I went to dental school back when there was kind of this transition period between where people who were dentist kids, they were going to dental school, but not enough of them. So they started letting in anybody, and that's how I got in. It sounds so funny, but it's actually kind of true. I mean, you had to be competitive, yeah, but it was kind of funny because, like, when I got to dental school, it was, you know, people just looked at you weird, like, God, what are you doing here? You're from a logging town in Oregon. What are you doing in dental school? I'm not kidding. People looked at you like you were, you know, there was something wrong with you. And one of my best friends in dental school had a cattle ranch in Montana. And it was just kind of funny. The guy was the smartest guy in the world. I'm not kidding. He was beyond genius. The guy never studied, never cracked a book, never nothing. He talked to me during the entire class periods while the lectures were going on. He talked pretty much the whole time, and was still, when we took tests, he was number one. And you would see his books. They still had cellophane on them, never opened. I don't know how he did it. He's just genius. But his entire family, all three, his brother and sister were the same way, just really bright. But anyway, my point is, so I did the redneck dentist in the very beginning when I started doing this show. I thought it would be fun and funny and appropriate, and it was, right? And then I kind of wanted to get off into, I wanted to include more people. And I think redneck, number one, will move some people away, and dentist, number two, will move some people away. So I changed and, you know, started kind of separating the shows into Right on the Left Coast and the Discerning Observer podcast. And this is the craziest thing. So that's been, what, 3 months or 4 months? I think I started after the first of the year, really, like in February or March, something like that. So what is this, April? Yeah, so it doesn't matter. It's been a few months. But on Buzzsprout, I have over 500 downloads, and that's just on Buzzsprout, which is where I post my audio podcast to get redistributed to other sites. And it's kind of crazy that it's just kind of crazy that just making a small thanks. It's kind of crazy that making a small change like that has kind of brought in more people. Now, if we could just get them over to Real Liberty Media and get them in the chat room and become active on that site, that would be awesome. But you know how people are these days. I'm not kidding. People take information wherever they can get it. I mean, look at this huge story this week, Tucker Carlson out at Fox News. Where's he going to go? Well, who knows? But everybody's waiting to have him go somewhere so they can listen to him and, you know, get the information that he feeds because he's who he is. You know, and so many of us get our information from certain places and we support them in some way, but it's not always the way that they want to be supported. Like, you know, I'm grateful to have people download my podcast. I never plan to make any money with this. I just want to have fun. Really, honestly, don't care. And I think that's the way things are going these days, is people are doing things different. We're running out of time. Thanks for listening. Check out Hal Anthony Behind the Woodshed tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern. See you next time on Right on the Left Coast podcast. Thank you for listening.